All right, it is Sunday morning. Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. The alarm went off, so all good.
Well, what time did you get up today?
About 3:30, Marty.
Yeah, I got up at 4:30. Okay, it just
it's been about an hour for me, but it's pretty good. At 4:30, that's an admirable thing you've done there.
Well, yeah, you know, we got to get loose here and get ready for the show. But, hey, listen, I like this series between the Braves and the Giants, and thank God for Dansby Swanson. Every time they got in trouble, they got to him. But, Bruce, Logan Webb, if this thing started, the playoffs started tomorrow, I pitch him. I don't care about Kevin Gausman, DeSclafani, Cueto, and the rest of them. This is the guy I give the ball to.
Yeah, whether it's game one of the division or if they get into the wild card, he's definitely the guy. You know, what they want to avoid would be him having to pitch a sort of a winner-take-all game to avoid the wild card or some such thing. But I think right now they're definitely looking to line him up for that. It just makes too much sense. His last at least seven starts have been just fantastic. The stuff is great. The confidence is building. I love how he came out for the seventh, which doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, for him it is. And I was even hoping he'd get a little more time out there just to build more confidence. You never know. I mean, if you can get him to go eight innings in a postseason game, that would be the ultimate. But the bottom line is he's really, really looking good out there. And he got out of a couple of jams really beautifully, especially when he popped up Swanson with nobody out there and got first and third, and he got the double play. Come back or right back to him, and all of a sudden what looked like a horrible inning with a Flores error turned into yet another blank job by Webb. So he's just he's doing it all right now.
Yeah, his fielding. And, you know, you don't see that 1-6-3 that much anymore. You know, the pitchers are tentative, and they're afraid to throw the ball a second. And then he got a hit. Come on, he got a double, and Yastrzemski knocked him in on a sacrifice fly.
Yeah, he yanked one down the line. It was great.
LaStella got him in. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Webb, he can swing the bat a little bit, which is a bit of a rarity on the Giants staff this year. Traditionally, they've had some pretty good hitters in there, good bunters. That's not really the case this year, but that was pretty good to see. I think he enjoyed it because, you know, Inoa, the Braves pitcher, was up there taking these huge hacks at Webb and, you know, staring him down. And Webb finally blew him away. Then he stepped up and doubled off the guy. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, a very good night. Bill, I'll ask you this. The 1-6-3, do we not see it as much? I'll tell you, when he threw the one whatever it was, second or short, I said, boy, I haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah, it all depends, Marty, on where the shift is and who's covering second base. But, boy, in spring training you do about 100 of those a day, and it's just automatic. As long as you always know who's covering second, you always see the pitcher, of course, Bruce, and you both see this all the time where the pitcher looks back who's covering second base on a ball back to me. So you know where to lead the infielder. If it's second base, more to the right side, and as a shortstop, more to his glove side. And he did that really well. He picked that and turned it, and it was a great double play at that time.
Yeah, you make a good point about the shift because you never know who's going to be there, if anyone.
Really?
Yeah.
You want to throw it into his empty space.
Yeah, that was a good play for him. Yeah, so I agree, Bruce. One-game playoff, division series, whatever it is, it's gonna take some nerve to skip Gausman and give the kid the ball, I think, but I would do it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could argue it. I mean, if we're looking at the same situation, you know, a month from now, where Gausman's sort of in and out, maybe the hip's bugging him a little bit, and Webb is still dealing out there, I don't think there'd be a whole lot of argument. I don't think Gausman would put up a big fuss, especially if they are in the division series. You know, he'd get his start. He'd probably pitch game two. Although, you know, Cueto, I wouldn't bet against in a big game either. So they've got three guys who could be pretty formidable in that role.
Bill, do you give the ball to Webb without a doubt?
In a second. I mean, 13 straight starts. And, you know, the biggest thing when both you and Bruce have talked about is his dominance. There's nothing that he's a fear of. The confidence in all his pitches. And you saw Buster Posey behind the plate. He'd go double changeup, double slider, back-to-back, good fastballs in. Getting ahead of hitters, you know, we talk about first-pitch strikes. He had 19 first-pitch strikes yesterday with 27 hitters. And that's a big, big plus for him because then he gets that confidence in throwing that secondary pitch.
Yeah, he's got that wipeout changeup to left-hand hitters, and then the slider to right-handers has really been devastating. So either way, he's dealing low and away to guys and putting them away.
Well, 5-0 was a score, but believe me, it was a closer game than that. The
yeah.
Braves had traffic all the time, 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. So today they go to Ian Anderson, hard-throwing young man. He was great last year. Remember in the playoffs what he did last year? And then it's DeSclafani, who's got to reestablish himself to be a strong pitcher. And where does he fit in? Because, Bruce, you're right. Cueto could jump over him if in a playoff rotation.
Well, I think that would be the case no matter what DeSclafani does, assuming that Cueto is healthy, because he's just too much experience, too smart, too ready for the occasion. He's done it many times, but it is a big start for DeSclafani. I mean, if he gets back to where he was, I mean, now all of a sudden, given that Gausman's going to keep giving you, or I should say, resume giving you great starts, that rotation looks fantastic all of a sudden.
You know, Marty, you brought up a good point about DeSclafani. He hasn't pitched this many innings in years. And when you go back a couple of years, and, of course, his injury with Cincinnati before he came over to the Giants. And I think just the rest here, you know, even though it was an ankle injury, his arm's still thrown, he's still out in the outfield doing long toss. And today is just going to get out there and see how he does that first inning so he doesn't overthrow. I think that's one of the main concerns they're going to be watching, and how he develops in that first inning and how he goes from there.
Yeah, they got a lot. They got a lot of bullpen today. They didn't really use too much yesterday. And Jay Jackson seems to strike out the side all the time. him and Rogers in there, and as Bruce said, Webb gave you 7 last night. So I'd say there should be a lot of bullpen behind DeSclafani today. Bruce, agree?
Well, no doubt. I mean, Rogers and McGee are going to be ready, and you know the way Garcia and Alvarez have been pitching, that's 2 more guys that you like. So they're definitely loaded up for today. I probably would not see Jackson, but he didn't need much time to put together a hell of an inning there. And it was very, very cool that they just turned it over to him there. They had the chance for him to screw up a little bit, and he didn't. But for him to all of a sudden finish off a game like that, that's huge for his confidence. So, you know, the bullpen is looking very, very deep right now. And it's coming at a good time because it looks like Kenley Jansen sort of got it back a little bit for the Dodgers. He's finishing off their game. They seldom, if ever, lose. So it's a good time for the Giants to keep that bullpen edge.
You know, it's amazing. And I said this yesterday, and the Brewers are coming in, then the Dodgers. Look, you know, we're getting down there. You know, there's only 33 games to go, and, you know, we're starting to get down there. And there's pressure on the Dodgers now not to lose. Because you go back 4 or 5 games with 28 to go, you've got trouble. And we're getting to a point of the season now, and everybody loves the Dodgers and loves the Dodgers. And I'll say it again. They're going to love the Dodgers when they're 4 out with 3 to go. No one has given up on them. It's amazing.
Well, you can't give up on the Dodgers. They're 82-48. I mean, they're playing great ball, and they have a great roster. But it's going to be a little desperate for them if all of a sudden they're looking at that wild card game after everything they've been through this season and getting it back together, this and that, Bellinger and Jansen getting back in there and trading for Scherzer and Turner, and all of a sudden they're playing the Reds from one game playoff. It's like, oh, I mean, that's rude. That could be a very rude ending to the season, but. It's just, you know, the whole thing is that it's Giants Dodgers down the stretch, and it just doesn't get any better than that.
No, the stretch is coming. You know, once you get into the 20s, you know, then that'll be another week. But it's the Brewers this week. This is a good week of baseball, isn't it? Brewers for 4. You got Corbin Burns tomorrow night and Cueto, and then the Dodgers over the weekend. How about that?
Yeah, the Brewers, they start you off with Colton Wong's having a great season. Willie Adames is having a great season. And Yelich is hitting third. He's getting it back. And Garcia cleaning up with 24 homers and Lorenzo Cain and Rowdy Tellez and then that good pitching staff. That team is really a load. I mean, it's no accident they're, 7 or 8 games up on the Reds and in the Central. And the Giants-Brewers games have been good. This year, and they're going to continue to be good. I think who are we going to see? Are we going to see their 2 best guys right off the bat? Or I'm not sure what the Brewers' rotation is looking like.
Yeah, well, I know Burns is going tomorrow.
Yeah, Burns and Woodruff. Yeah.
So let's see. Yeah, Woodruff followed Burns, right?
There you go.
Woodruff,
yeah.
In that second game, then third game. Let's see. We've got Burns, Woodruff, and then who knows? Brett Anderson has been in there, and Lauer. So they had the two lefties. But I don't know if Peralta will be back.
Remember, right.
And that was August 18th. So he.
Yeah, well, they start off with Burns and Woodruff. That's kind of where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
And you know, gentlemen, when they went to Milwaukee, they didn't have that top bullpen. Hader was on COVID. They had a couple other relievers, and that's why those games were extended a little bit. And I think that's one of the keys here. If Milwaukee gets the lead, to go to that bullpen, because that bullpen's lights out just as well as the Giants. So I think it's going to be a better four-game series than what we saw in Milwaukee. But at the same time, a four-game series is just so tough, especially playing a first-place team like Milwaukee.
Yeah, and you know, the Giants, you just expect them to either win or split any series that they're in. They refuse to have a bad spell. It just keeps going. There's that great stat where they've played 600 plus ball every month of the season, and no National League team had done that since World War II times. So I mean, it's just, including August. So I mean, it's completely crazy and just pretty delightful too.
Couple of things in baseball, and Bill brought this up earlier. Jerry Kuzman had his number retired, number 36, by the Mets last night. Your thoughts on Kuzman, Bruce?
Well, you know, you remember the 69 stretch drive and playoffs, against the Braves, and Kuzman got the win in the when they put the Orioles away to win the title. I think he got the win in that game. Great left-handed pitcher. He pitched for a long time. Great arm. Really a solid guy. I mean, you had Seaver and Gary Gentry, Nolan Ryan, and that staff, especially at that time, it was just mind-blowing to think that after you've gone through Seaver and Kuzman, and this guy Nolan Ryan is out there looming, you know. but the Mets were such a great story, and he was a real rock-solid guy, right, you know, with Cleon Jones and Tommy Agee and everybody sort of coming out of nowhere, but they really did look the part, and they were good for several years thereafter as well.
Ohtani last night set a record. He's got 41 homers, and he stole his 20th base last night, the first to do it since Curtis Granderson in 2011, and I think the first Angel to do it ever. But how about that? I wonder if he, you know, can he be a 50-30 guy? Who knows where it's going to end up, but 40-20, that's and he's a pitcher.
He's a pitcher. I mean, the fact that he runs so well is not always talked about. But he's very fast, and he knows how to run the bases. And just when you've seen his assortment of bombs into the stands and sliders and splitters and wiping guys out, then he'll steal a base for him. Who the hell is this guy? It was scary yesterday. He got hit in the hand, and you never know what's going to go on there. But apparently he got out of that okay. And they left him in the game. I love Madden. He's not babying the guy. You know, he's playing. He wants him in there. I mean, not just because, I mean, they're kind of hopelessly out of it, but, he's so great for the game, and people want to see him. He's obviously not going to play him when he's hurt, but he's consistently out there. He's DHing, he's homering, he's stealing bases, he's throwing a two-strike slider, just wiping out the best hitters in the game. It gets to be kind of routine, and you don't want to take something like this for granted because we've never really seen it before, and I can't imagine seeing it again. I mean, as of next year, I don't think pitchers will be hitting anywhere in the bigs. And, you know, with that kind of DH mentality, it kind of discourages younger kids from trying to be an Ohtani.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And, with the DH next year, well, he's in the American League anyway, so they'll have to figure out how
to use
him.
It's just the overall mood of not being able to hit. Yeah, if you're a pitcher, it's going to be tough for guys to try to do any kind of two-way thing.
I'll tell you another one that's got me, and this is Tyler Rogers. Bruce and Bill, this guy comes in, he's getting better. He's getting better, and you can kiss the eighth inning goodbye when he comes in, and you hope McGee doesn't go back-to-back-to-back and have trouble. But that eighth inning, they seem to be able to throw this guy every day. I think he leads the major league in appearances now. What a pitcher. And he's getting better.
He's just so different. That's the beauty of him. I think if you really did see him every day, like for two or three innings at a time, not that would happen, but any time he pitched, if he pitched two or three innings at a time, it might be a little bit different. But he's, you know, you've seen whoever you've seen leading up to that, whether it's Gausman or Webb or Trevor Wood, this guy's just absolutely different. And he's really getting that breaking pitch down where it comes in tight on a left-hand hitter. It looks so good, and all of a sudden it's in on his hands, and it's a really tough pitch to hit. And, of course, if you're up there right-handed, you might whiff horribly on it trying to catch up to it low and away. And then he comes the other way. Then he can tail the fastball, and he's if he's got his control, it's kind of over, at least for that one inning.
Well, I'll tell you something. Go ahead, Bill, but I'll say this about Rodgers and then jump in here. Mm-hmm. This guy gets soft contact. I mean, he makes good hitters miss it and swing and miss the ball by 2 feet. I mean, good hitters. And that, to me, has been great. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Marty. I mean, yesterday, two infield hits in first and second. Sure enough, he does give home runs up when the ball tails across the plate. But I think the second half, he's starting to edge the plate a little bit more. He's using the sinker a little bit more. And, you know, we all remember Kent Tekulve and Dan Quisenberry and how well they pitched daily, and they were in every game, it seemed like. And, of course, throwing underhand, it's a natural position, then overhand. And, you know, when he plays catch, he throws overhand. But when he's on the mound, he throws underhand, which is kind of strange. But in the same time, I mean, he doesn't get tired, and that's the good thing about him. And I think they give him rest, Marty and Bruce, because they say, hey, sit him down. He doesn't need to throw every day. I'm sure he would if he had to.
Yeah, I think so. And he's radically underhand. He's scraping the dirt with his knuckles. I mean, you can't get any more submarine than this guy. It's really radical. And like you say, Bill, if the pitch comes into somebody's wheelhouse, it's a different story. But he hasn't been missing. He's been hitting the corners and pitching in and out. He can get the ball moving either way. And, you know, just when you've seen a couple of those breaking pitches, either here comes the sinker going the other way. And it's just really tough.
This could be interesting today. Rodgers, McGee, the whole bullpen is rested. And we haven't seen this Tyler Matzek yet. Have you heard of this guy, Bruce, for the Braves, the left-hander?
I have not.
Well, righties are hitting 020 against him in the last 62 at-bats. Well, righties. And they're hitting 136 for the year against him. But in the last 62 at-bats, 020. And he's a left-hander.
Grief.
Yeah, so I'll guarantee you we're going to see him at some point today. And we'll see him. And this is going to be an interesting game today.
Oh, yeah, the Braves are tough. They don't get shut out very often. They don't. You know, they tend to come up big and guys on, and they didn't last night. And it's the two division leaders going at it. And they're as we were talking about yesterday, they're a super entertaining team. You know, Ozzie Albies makes a couple of great plays yesterday. You know, Freeman's just a load, and they just I love watching Jock Peterson. He's so unorthodox, but he's so good, and they're a load.
Yeah, it's fun. This is, you know, yesterday Webb took charge and he dominated the game, and pitchers can do it. But it was a close game, and today here we are again, a young kid, Anderson, coming back. They're not going to push him, I'm sure, as hard as they could, and then we'll see bullpen there. And same thing with DeSclafani. So I think we're going to see a crazy kind of game today. It'd be different. All right. August 29th, one day before Bonnie Lurie's birthday, Bonnie Barmae's birthday, and Ted Williams. But 1951, the Yankees trade Lou Burdett and $50,000 to the Braves for Johnny Sane. And Lou Burdett, Bushville wins 1957. But how about that trade, 1951?
Yeah, well, it is interesting that the Yankees signed him, given what happened later. But after they did, the next spring, he wound up being optioned to the San Francisco Seals. He's playing for Lefty O'Doul out here. And then he develops he developed pretty good with the Yanks, but that trade, you know, that was an awfully big deal. They wanted to get Johnny Sane, but it comes down to the 1957 World Series. Burdett's got two complete games already behind him against the Yanks, and it's Game 7, and, you know, here comes Warren Spahn, except Spahn's got the flu. So Burdett on 2 days of rest pitches his third complete game win. This one's at Yankee Stadium to win it all in his second shutout. I mean, it's one of the all-time World Series performances over seven games. It's hard to top it, really. And that put his name in the books forever. Just an epic performance. You know, dueling Whitey Ford at Yankee Stadium. That doesn't get any better than that.
I love it. But the trade. I mean, the Yankees had him and traded him to the Braves. And then he comes back to stick it to Casey Stengel and everybody else. It's a great story. Great story.
This guy threw 158 complete games in his career.
Wow.
And, you know, today a great career is like four. Almost literally. I mean, Max Scherzer's only got 12, you know, and he's like the stud of all studs. I mean, 158. I just got to love that.
I love it. Burdett and 50,000. So
yeah,
that
right.
was the trade. 2010, Frank Thomas, the White Sox retire number 35. And, Bruce, I don't know, does Frank Thomas get enough play, 301 average, 521 homers, 1,704 RBI? Maybe the little bit of the criticism that he, you know, took too many pitches, but he's a great Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. At the time, he was completely blowing minds. I mean, he broke in I think he hit about 330, 60 games. In the next seven seasons, he's over 300 and just getting better. Like the last two of those seven, he's hitting 349 and 347, you know, driving in 100 runs. He's enormous. He's very fearsome, and yet he's got a really good batting eye, always up there in walks. He was like, to me, he was like an instant Hall of Famer. I mean, you take a look at this guy and you start watching what he's doing. It's like he just was a lock for the Hall of Fame. I think at the time he definitely got his due. But, you know, after a little bit of time, he moves around a little bit. Maybe it loses a little bit of luster. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you forget he was with the A's. When the A's went to the playoffs in 2006, he was their DH playing every day, was at fourth in the MVP voting. He had 39 homers for the A's. Mm. And he was dominant when they swept the Twins to get to the ALCS against the Tigers. He didn't do well there, but he was a mainstay for one of the better Oakland teams of recent years. So really interesting guy. And then he came back to the A's for the very end of his career in 2008. And the last homer he hit was off Armando Galarraga.
Wow.
The guy who's had a perfect game ruined by a bad umpire's call, Jim Joyce. That's the last guy Frank Thomas took deep.
Wow. Bill, what do you think of Frank Thomas?
Oh, I tell you what, comparisons, Dave Winfield, even Frank Howard, how big he was. That's what Bruce was talking about. He was mammoth when he came to the plate. The bat looked really small in his hands, and he was an agile player. You know, he could play first base, and totally a Hall of Famer. His numbers speak for itself. The power he had, he could go to right field with it. Yeah, I just loved him. I loved watching him play. I never got to pitch against him. But he could, you know, dominate the fastball in and away as well as the breaking pitch. And when you get big guys like that and they get that stride and their hands still stay back, the power they can still generate as big as they are, and that's what he did so many times to pitchers. You could outfool them, but you couldn't outfool those hands, and the power he had just generated everything.
Mm. I've got to think the White Sox were astounded that he was still available at number seven overall. The Orioles had the first one. They took Ben McDonald, which was kind of understandable. But the next five guys taken before Frank Thomas, you never heard of them. Mm-hmm. You know, Donald Harris, Paul Coleman. I mean, and then all of a sudden, the White Sox, he's still there at number seven, and the White Sox draft this guy that's going to dominate the league for 15 years.
Wow. And he was a football player at Auburn. I think wasn't he a tight end at Auburn?
I think for a while. I think he realized that baseball, there's a little more longevity there, and you know, that's the Auburn was like, you know, Charles Barkley and Bo Jackson, and it's just a time of insane athletes there. He was just another guy on campus.
Yeah, oh, very good. Boy, Bruce, thanks for getting up early this morning. A lot of fun to talk to you, and we're going to see a good game today, and what a week of baseball we got coming up, and talk to you next week when the Dodgers are in town. So enjoy Sunday. I appreciate you being
thanks,
on.
Thanks, Bruce.
Great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Bruce Jenkins. Bill, this is some week of baseball coming up.
Oh, this is the grind right here, and you're talking about the top tier teams: Atlanta in the NL East, Milwaukee NL Central, and of course the Dodgers coming out next weekend. Giant fans just need to get out, Marty. They need to pack the place. They need to get that energy for this team because this team is playing so well, and love to see a packed house against these four games against Brewers.
Yeah, this is, again, I'll tell you, I mean, the Giants are not a favorite today. The Braves are the favorite in the game today. And I keep saying it, and I have all these people on, and we have all these national people on, and they just keep talking Dodgers. And Bruce is right. Look, you're, you know, three back in the loss column with 32 to go. You know, but let me tell you something. You slip a little bit, and you're six back with 25 to go, mm-hmm. we can say goodbye. And, you know, this could happen. So this is a big week of baseball for both the Giants and the Dodgers to see what happens. Because the Dodgers
right,
get
Marty.
The Braves and the Giants get the Brewers.
Yeah, and the rest of the season, the Dodgers still have a tough schedule ahead of them. They play St. Louis. And then the final three games of the season when the Giants play San Diego, the Dodgers play Milwaukee. So, you know, mm-hmm. it's a good back and forth going all the way down to the first weekend in October, the last three games of the year. So it's going to be compelling, no doubt about it. Giants aren't going anywhere. Let all these experts think what they think. And I like your answer, Marty. Four games left with three games out or something like that you
yeah,
just said.
I love
that one.
They're still going to be saying, don't worry, the Dodgers will be okay. Don't worry. All right, we'll take a break. Raf says Kerry's got to go at about 8:14. So let's take a quick break, get Kerry on, and we'll go from there right here on the Sports Leader.